This is the Lean Nation with Carl Wattenstein on AM 790. Learn how you can maximize customer value
while minimizing waste.
And now the leader of Lean Nation,
Captain Carl,
at your station for talk and business,
AM 790.
And welcome to the Lean Nation. This is Linda Kleinerberg sitting in for Carl Wattenstein on this happy Monday. It's a little cool, a little dreary outside, but I think the sun always shines on the Lean Nation. So we're going to have a great show today. Carl is up at an EDC board meeting, and they're actually going to the Gemba today, which is really exciting. They are going to Hasbro Children's Hospital for the Rhode Island EDC board meeting today. So it's totally apropos who we have on the air with us as a guest, who I'll introduce in just a minute. But first, I wanted to talk a little bit about some fun I've been having lately, in that I'm becoming a little bit of a social networks junkie. You know, I mentioned this, I think, when I was on the air with Dan McCrory last week, that it wasn't until, like, Thanksgiving 2 years ago or whatever that I got into Facebook and social networking. Now it's actually become part of my job and a part of my life. But, you know, the thing about becoming I'm becoming a little bit of a junkie on, it's not that I'm like posting cats and, you know, falling out of trees or girlfriends breaking their lazy boyfriend's PlayStations or some of the stuff that I see, though that stuff's funny and I have to admit watching it. But that's not what I'm posting or what I'm looking at. I'm interested because I'm finding some really funny, witty, smart, cool people. And I think that an interesting thing happens when people are on social networks. It sort of magnifies certain aspects of your personality. You know, so if you like to cook, maybe on the social networks you really post a lot about the food that you make, Mark. If you like to go to sporting events, maybe you post a lot about, you know, your team or that you're going to events or what you see at the events. So it sort of magnifies these little quirky pieces of your personality. And so you get insight into the things that make people weird, which for me is always the interesting stuff, right? You know, like for me, my Facebook friends have realized that I've had some weird natural phenomena going on in my yard this summer. We have had enormous spiders in my yard, right? And so the whole summer I've been documenting this, you know, I had this enormous, I think it was called an agriope or agriope. I don't know how to pronounce it, but, you know, these enormous, beautiful spiders, and I just keep finding them, right? And then lately it's the acorns. We have thousands and thousands and thousands of acorns falling in our yard. And it turns out lots of other people have the same problem. So these are the kinds of funny things you figure out on the social network. And as I mentioned previously, some people like to post about their cooking. Some people like to post about sporting events. Our guest today actually likes to post about both. Mark Graben is a member of the Healthcare Value Leaders Network, which is why it was apropos that Carl was up at an EDC board meeting at Hasbro Children's Hospital today. And he is also a prodigious and mobile Facebook poster. So, Mark, welcome to the show. So happy to have you on again.
Thanks, Linda. You get funny, interesting, and cool people, and then you get me. No. Thanks for having me on the show again.
Sure. You know what, Mark? Nobody complains about officiating like you do.
But that's the virtual weekly college friends reunion as we're watching football in our different cities. It's a great way to complain about the referees together.
Well, you know, you write a blog. You're active on the social networks. Do you agree? Like, it's just a way that the quirkiest, funniest things about people just come out.
Yeah. It's a different way to learn about people, I think. And I think social media has gotten a bad rap as being that place where people post about what they ate for lunch or what their kitten is doing right now. There's a lot more useful uses for that.
Yeah, I mean, it's actually one of the places that I find lots of guests for the show, and where you can have some really robust conversations. And just before we came on here, I was telling you I was looking through your blog in preparation for the conversation and came across this really kind of neat series of posts and comments about fear in the workplace and sort of that need to remove fear from the workplace and how, you know, it stifles creativity and all kinds. It was a really interesting conversation.
Well, thanks. And, you know, it's one of those old but timeless lessons from Dr. W. Edwards Deming, that one of the, you know, 14 key points of his was to eliminate fear from organizations, because it stifles, and not only stifles creativity, it stifles improvement. And you know, I think it's a timeless point and one that's worth bringing up, because I think a lot of organizations, I see this in healthcare, people say they want to do lean, but when the frontline staff and managers and people they're working with can't get past that fear of, well, if we try something, it might fail. If we try something, it might be the wrong thing, or we might get in trouble. That, you know, that simple thing of fear being in the air can really hamper people's attempts to do much of anything, yet alone lean.
All right, and I think in a lot of organizations, there's a culture of can't. You know, where people come up with reasons why they can't do things. And I don't think that's because people generally don't want to move forward or push forward. It's just that's been the culture, and the easiest way to survive is to come up with reasons not to do things.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of that in healthcare environments. And I mean, I think of one project team that I worked with in particular, the Children's Hospital. It was a neat exercise, and it's one that I sort of made a very standard part of what I was doing working with organizations, is that before we even talked about what we wanted to improve or what we thought our goals were, we talked about some of the mental models that were there in the organization, the existing mental models and what needed to be there in terms of attitudes and the way people viewed the world. And one of them that came up that ended up resonating very strongly with the staff was shifting, the need to shift from, you know, here's why we can't, to thinking, here's how we can. And it sounds so sing-songy and simple, maybe, but in a lot of organizations, I think people too readily accept that as an excuse. To say, I mean, sometimes, yes, there's barriers, but sometimes they say, oh, we can't because, well, you know, let's push and try to motivate people and find ways of making it happen.
And I agree with that. And in a lot of places, the culture kind of supports this notion of death by committee, right? Because nobody wants to own a decision. Nobody wants to take charge and take responsibility because of fear and because there's risk involved in that. You know, if you really own something and it fails, you know, is that a black mark forever on you? And so there's this endless committee forming so that nobody actually has to own the decision. Nobody actually has to own either being responsible for action or inaction. And so inaction is way easier and way less risky, especially if you're talking about sort of these big subcommittee, big steering committees, big committee situations where, you know, you just kind of get to go and talk about things. And since nobody really owns it, nobody's really accountable, so you just go and keep talking about things.
Yeah, and that's, again, I mean, it's a fairly common dynamic in healthcare, and this is true in manufacturing. You have the quality committee that gets together once a month, and you don't get rapid response or action, or, you know, it's talk-oriented instead of action-oriented. So one of the things I often recommend is when managers and leaders say, well, we don't have time to improve the process, well, how about we cancel some of these committee meetings and work instead on getting to the Gemba, if you will, getting out there where the action is out of the conference room, and let's work with people and let's make improvement happen.
And speaking of getting out to the Gemba, you are part of the Healthcare Value Leaders Network.
Right.
Yes. Can you tell our listeners a little bit of what that really is?
Sure. So Healthcare Value Leaders Network is a partnership that the Lean Enterprise Institute started with the Theta Care Center for Healthcare Value. So John Toussaint from Theta Care has been on the show before. He was the former CEO at Theta Care and really one of the driving forces between their lean efforts and their culture change. And we partnered with John and his nonprofit to really try to figure out what we could do to help promote and move lean forward within healthcare. And so the feedback, there was a meeting in late 2008, and one of the things that quickly bubbled up in that discussion, John Shook and one of the people from University of Michigan Health System led the group through an A3 exercise of, well, you know, instead of rushing to do something, let's define a problem, let's look for a root cause. And one of the things that came out loud and clear was that all of these organizations have some consultant that they're working with, but they were really hungry for some sort of formal interaction with other healthcare organizations, with other leaders and other people within those organizations. So that was some of the genesis for the network. And now we have 24 organizations across North America in two kind of separate but linked cohort groups that do all sorts of formal and informal networking and sharing and collaboration.
Talk to me about the cohort groups. Are those aligned with any kind of similarities? Was it timing? How are the cohorts structured?
It's really, right now, it's a matter of the timing of when organizations got involved. And, you know, there's all sorts of pros and cons. We have each cohort is literally spread from coast to coast, and each cohort includes one or two organizations from Canada. So that creates some challenges. We do get together three times a year for what we call Gemba visits mm-hmm. at one of the organizations to actually go and learn and see firsthand. So that creates some travel challenges, but I think the diversity in each of the networks, both geographically and by type of organization and by size of organization, you know, you have large primary care group practices, academic medical centers, children's hospitals, community hospitals, and all sorts of different variations of those organizations. You know, I think that provides some unique opportunities for people to learn from similar organizations. And we find that lean methods, lean culture applies in all of those.
So what is really your role, Mark? Oh, you know what? I hear that we're going to have to go to break here. But what I'd like to do when we come back is really talk about what you do for the Healthcare Value Leaders Network. And you guys had a recent Gemba visit to Parc Nicolet, so I want to hear about that too. So when we come back, we'll talk with Mark Graben, writer of leanblog.org and also a good friend of the Vibration Nation. We'll talk with him after the break. So you're listening to the Lean Nation on AM 790, your station for talk and business. Not doing anything during the break? We'll go to Facebook. We talked about it earlier in the show. Become a friend. Lean Nation. Search it. See you on the other side.
Maximize customer value
and minimize waste.
The Lean Nation
on AM 790.
Hey, and welcome back to the Lean Nation. This is Linda Kleineberg sitting in for Carl Wadson. Carl is up doing a Gemba with the Rhode Island EDC board at Hasbro Children's Hospital today. And so, apropos, we are joined on the line today with Mark Graben, who is one of our favorite folks, formerly of the Lean Enterprise Institute, now part of this fantastic Healthcare Value Leaders Network. And before the break, we had just started to talk about what the Healthcare Value Leaders Network is, and I had just asked Mark sort of what his role is and what he actually does with the Healthcare Value Leaders Network. What do you actually do?
Are you quoting the movie Office Space when you ask that? You know, the consultant.
Do you do TPS reports?
What is it that you do here? So, well, in my formal role is Director of Communication and Technology. So I work on a number of projects, including some internal communication efforts, some of which, of course, then relate to technology. So we have an internal kind of a private website for our 24 members across the two networks. We've got about 420 people that are signed up for it. It's kind of like a private social network. So, again, it's apropos that you started the show talking about that. So, you know, we do these Gemba visits three times a year. Then we've also tried to do a lot of experiments to bring people together with technology. So we have that website. We do a lot of live video streaming. So when we go to the Gemba visits, you know, we really only have the capacity, because of space and other practical reasons, to have about three people from each organization come visit and see, like we did at Parc Nicolet. But then the way technology is available these days, with basically a camcorder, a tripod, and a laptop, we can broadcast some of the portions of our meeting out through that private website for the other 400-plus people to listen in and watch in on. So that's kind of what we're doing. And then I also work on, you know, communication and technology focused outside of the network. So we're trying to do more in terms of putting together case studies and articles and videos and things that we share with people in different ways.
So interesting. So you just mentioned a Gemba visit up to Parc Nicolet. During the break, Mark and I had a brief opportunity to chat a little bit about that Gemba visit, and I'm absolutely intrigued. What were sort of the big revelations, any big advances or things that just kind of made you go, wow, while you were up at Parc Nicolet?
Yeah, the big wow moment was some work they've done redesigning, completely designing a really revolutionary cancer treatment center. And it's not that the cancer care, the technical clinical treatment itself is any different. They're already good at that, but designing the building and the process and everything to be so incredibly thoughtful to patient needs
I think so. Did they start from scratch, Mark, and totally redesign an entire unit?
It's a new building, new unit. They completely rethought it using a lean methodology that sometimes, you know, unfortunately, kind of a lesser known methodology called the 3P methodology: production, preparation, process. Or, you know, in healthcare, you could call it maybe a patient preparation process. But this involves a lot of involvement of frontline staff. It's very much a rapid cycle improvement methodology, where they do a lot of drawings and a lot of physical mock-ups. So they have a floor in their hospital. It's just big open space that they can do full-size room mock-ups with cardboard and a lot of things you might consider rapid prototyping to really figure out, like, for example, what's the exact perfect design of that room that the patient's going to be in. And that was the other amazing insight. When we say that room, that means the one room that the patient goes to during their treatment. So one of the things they saw, and I love the way they put this, is that if you see somebody go for outpatient cancer treatment, they normally make them walk here and then walk there and then sign in here and sit and wait there. And there's all this moving back and forth to different departments, different functional silos.
And it's confusing.
It's confusing, and they said, well, you know, it's kind of cruel to take somebody who has cancer, they don't have a whole lot of energy, don't waste that energy making them walk around from place to place. So they've designed a cancer treatment center where everything, the exam, the treatment, the chemotherapy, everything except, you know, the radiation, is still a necessary functional silo. But for somebody just doing chemotherapy, they come in, they park in that chair, everybody comes to them.
So it makes the patient the center of the operation,
patient-centered care.
And I think from a sort of a perspective of actual workflow and organization, I'm sure it makes beautiful, you know, it's beautiful music and it makes wonderful sense. But I think it also sends a very clear message to the patient, which, you know, if you've even read a little bit about healthcare, you know that the mental health of the patient is a critically important factor in terms of healing and success, right? And so you're already contributing to that confident frame of mind and that I'm going to be cared for frame of mind when you make the patient the center.
Yeah, and it seems so simple, right? I mean, you know, patient-centered care, you think, what else could it be? But
yeah, but we're all used to seeing gurneys travel around hospitals.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of times, you know, hospitals, like a lot of very traditional organizations, maybe this is from back in the day, healthcare learned some of the old bad lessons from manufacturing, even though I think today people are trying to learn some of the newer, better lessons. And a lot of this comes back to the reason of functional specialty. People have their academic career paths and professional career paths in a silo, so organizations tend to build up around those silos. And so one of the key lean mindsets is to focus on the value stream across those silos, and that becomes a much more patient-centered approach in situations like these.
So does Park Nicola, how new is this cancer treatment unit?
It's brand new. I would say it's within the last year. And
okay, do they have any metrics or measurements at this point that indicate any quality advantages? Is it more anecdotal at this point? What sort of studies have they done or measurements have they done?
No, I don't have the data handy, but I think the focus is on the patient satisfaction, the patient experience. The clinical care of, you know, actually doing the diagnosis and treatment plan and chemotherapy is top notch as before, but just trying to make sure the patient has a better experience is the key. So it'll be interesting to see how that's measured and how that's gauged. But in the short term, they've actually, and this may be the first case, of taking this lean-inspired improvement and turning it into a marketing campaign. They literally have television ads where the slogan is, where the care comes to you.
Well, that sounds, I'll be interested to talk with you a little bit more on the other side about making that transition from lean improvement to sales and marketing. Then you're listening to The Lean Nation on AM 790, your station for talking business. We are chatting today with Mark Graven of the Healthcare Value Leaders Network. When we come back, we'll talk more about his visit to Park Nicolet and also get on to some more fun topics, I'm betting. So we'll see you on the other side. Make sure you pay attention to the sponsor's messages. Be right back.
Now, more of the show that teaches you how to maximize customer satisfaction while minimizing waste. The Lean Nation with Captain Carl on AM 790.
And welcome back to the Lean Nation. This is Linda Kleineberg sitting in for Carl Waddenston. Today we're joined on the phone with our good friend Mark Graben, who's a member of the Healthcare Value Leaders Network. And before the break, we were talking about his recent visit to Park Nicollet Hospital. Or is it an actual hospital, Mark, or is it a group?
Well, yeah, so it's Park Nicollet Health Services.
Okay.
There's a hospital in the Minneapolis area, Methodist Hospital, and related services like the Cancer Treatment Center.
Okay. And so one of the revelations and aha moments Mark had on his recent visit to Park Nicollet was that their cancer unit had been totally redesigned, brand new building, that the care moves to the patient versus the patient having to shuffle around, get wheeled around, walk around a facility during what is obviously a stressful period of care to begin with. And just wanted to sort of continue to delve into that. Right before the break, you had mentioned that they've actually turned this improved cancer center into a marketing opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, I think it becomes a compelling case to try to attract, you know, patients who have, you know, a choice about where they go. And, you know, there's certain types of care where you don't have much of a choice, or if it's, you know, emergency care, you're going to go hopefully to the closest nearby facility or to a specialized trauma center. But for the types of healthcare where people can travel, that marketing and making that case, again, that this is all centered around you and your needs, there's an interesting marketing perspective there. And you know, people often talk about this idea of medical tourism, where people go off to other countries. But there's opportunities even when people have choices of where to go within the country. Or within a metro region, that marketing, I think that's a positive message you're sending to people, that this is going to be a better experience for you.
Well, and I can totally appreciate that. I mean, I just think back to when I was pregnant and choosing which hospital, which group, where I was going to, ultimately deliver my child. And absolutely, it was a choice decision. And so I can see, in terms of particularly when you're talking about things that are as important as terminal or serious illness treatment or the birth of your child or trauma center, whatever those things are, you have to really feel good about the choice if you can have a moment to think about it.
Yeah, and I think that experience is a more meaningful criteria than, to choose somebody because they've got a beautiful fountain inside their soaring atrium. And that's one thing, it's kind of a soapbox issue of mine that modern healthcare gives all these awards for healthcare architecture that has nothing to do with the functional experience or the treatment for the patient. So I'd rather
wait a minute, explain that to me for a second, Mark.
Well,
so we're rewarding architecture without function.
In a lot of cases, yeah, it's about what looks beautiful. I'm not saying in my world, perfect world hospitals would be ugly, but I think there's, sometimes they, I've heard hospitals say, well, patients have a lot more trust and faith in us if they see, marble and wood paneling and fountains and soaring atriums. And, I think, by comparison, Dr. Sammy Bahri, the lean dentist in Jacksonville, Florida, he doesn't have an ugly office, but he's focused on the patient experience and patient flow. And he sort of, I've heard him mention, dentists that try to do really nice looking lobbies and waiting rooms and plasma TVs and, he calls that spa dentistry, where they're trying to make the wait a more pleasant experience instead of eliminating the wait.
Right. I was just going to say, how about not making me wait? That would be awesome.
To me, that's the lean thinking. And so, there's, I think, opportunities to allow people to make choices. ThetaCare is documented and talked about a case where in their childbirth center, it's not just about how it looks, but they're trying to create a calmer experience, where some of the feedback they had, some patients, former patients, mothers involved in a Kaizen event, and one piece of feedback they got from the mothers was that people running in and out of the room to get supplies, that's not just an efficiency issue. That really stressed out the moms, wondering, what's going on? Why are you racing in and out? And that was something that was a big eye-opener to them to really make sure that they were viewing it from that patient perspective.
And that was actually, to be honest with you, Mike, that was one of the reasons that I made the selection that I made, is that I had a sense that one of the choices that I had was going to be, well, incredible quality care. Like the medicine part of this equation I will take out because there's, you know, Women and Infants Hospital is probably one of the finest birthing, you know, hospitals in the nation. So the quality of medicine aside, my sense as a patient with a pretty normal, you know, pregnancy and normal expectations for delivery was that, you know, I wanted to be at a place that had a slower pace. And was not necessarily, you know, had 15 different nurses with 15, that I just wanted to have a more, as you said, patient-centered type of care. And so I think it's interesting that we start thinking about things and start in terms of patient-centered care. You made a funny joke during the break, and I wish I, you know, about we don't drive, you know, driver-centric cars, you know, like, what else would we drive?
Well, that seems obvious, right? I mean, you know, some automakers, sure, they say, well, you know, the car's cockpit is really designed around the driver. But when, you know, again, I mean, it sounds silly to people sometimes when you think of, you know, patient-centered care, or the one hospital I walked past that was building a new birthing center and was advertising in a big, huge banner, you know, coming soon, family-centered childbirth. But again, it comes back to a lot of it is just, you know, hospital-centered, functional silo-centered, physician-centered, unfortunately, instead of being overly, you know, designed around the patient.
Well, and I think that's a lot. Honestly, I don't think that's just healthcare. I think that a lot of businesses are still organized and structured along an old business model of, you know, if you build it, they will come. If you sell it, they will buy. If you, you know, put it out into the market and it's a good product, people are just going to flock to you, when the reality is that the paradigm shifted. We have access to a lot more information. We can make informed choices and compare different products, compare different services. And so, you know, the new business model, you really have to be invested in your customer and go out and give your customer what they want when they want it, versus saying, you'll take it as we give it.
Yeah, and one of the frontiers that healthcare is still working on is this idea of giving patients information, you know, upon which to make a decision about where to go. And this is where, you know, John Toussaint, through his Theta Care Center, and a number of organizations in the U.S. and Canada are really pushing and promoting the idea of data transparency, to be able to look and see, if I'm going to have a procedure done, I want to choose the hospital that has the lower infection rates. Or if it's a really serious procedure, how do I know what hospitals have the lowest readmission rates or the lowest pneumonia rates or the lowest mortality rates? A lot of times in some states you can't really find that to make an informed choice the way you would have quality data about deciding on whose car, what car to buy.
I was just thinking about that analogy, you know, where there's certain levels of disclosure that, honestly, I don't know if they're mandated by law, but I know that by convention, at the very least, that every single car you look at, you know the miles per gallon, you know what the horsepower of the engine is, you know what, you know, how many cylinders the engine has, you know, all of these basic pieces of information upon which you can make, you know, at least start to make the decision. And you're right, that doesn't really exist in healthcare.
It's very inconsistent, it seems, state to state. And I think that's one piece of the puzzle of...
Is there a regulating body for that information, Mark?
Some of it is done at a state-by-state level. So where ThetaCare is in Wisconsin, they have a number of sort of state data collaboratives that compile and share and publish that information.
Is any of this, and forgive my ignorance, but I don't really know the particulars, is any of that kind of data transparency and quality data part of the new patient's Bill of Rights?
I haven't read all 2,000 pages of it, but my understanding
is... What do you mean,
that,
Mark?
my understanding is, I mean, I haven't heard of that being addressed specifically, where that federal law is really more focused on providing access to care and health insurance reform, more of the rules around what insurance companies can and can't do and must do. And there's still a big frontier around improving quality of care. Don Berwick, who was appointed to the head of Medicare and Medicaid, is going to be trying to work some of those frontiers, you know, through his role in that organization, a little bit outside of what was already passed through Congress. So there's still big opportunities to help promote and actually implement lean and quality improvement. And last week, this is something I blogged about, Dr. Berwick said, and this may surprise people coming from a Democratic administration, the answers and solutions are not going to come from Washington, D.C. He's saying that every community and every organization needs to implement their own quality, I'm paraphrasing, but that everyone needs to implement their own quality improvement methodologies. And I think that's one place where lean comes in. You can't go and just copy what a hospital in Washington State or Wisconsin did. You can learn the lean principles, and then you have to go and just work on it locally.
Right. I mean, and there's certainly no shame in seeing something fantastic and copying it to suit your needs. You know, but I like that essentially hospitals are communities, and they're part of the communities that they're in. And because of that, it's real people with special needs, special challenges, and special talents. So you, to organize your improvement objectives around those things, mm-hmm. you know, really makes a lot of sense. So I'm thankful to hear Washington saying you don't need us. Well, I hear the music, so we're going to head to break. When we come back on the other side, we're going to talk more with Mark about sort of what he's doing next, what they're doing with the Healthcare Value Leaders Network, where you can go to find more information, all that good stuff. So make sure to stay with us. Check out our sponsors. And if you're not doing anything, just go ahead to Facebook, search Lean Nation Radio. Hook up with us. There's a link to Mark's blog right on our Facebook page right now. So you're listening to the Lean Nation. I'm Linda Kleinerberg. It's AM 790, your station for talking business. We'll be right back.
Maximize customer value
and minimize waste.
The Lean Nation
on AM 790.
Hey, and welcome back to the Lean Nation. This is Linda Kleinerberg in for Carl Waddenston today. Carl's up at a Rhode Island EDC board meeting, going to the Gemba today at Hasbro Children's Hospital, which is really exciting, and happy to hear that that the hospital's opening up its doors and that the members of EDC are going to see sort of what's happening in the state of Rhode Island healthcare. So, Mark, we've been mentioning the Healthcare Value Leaders Network throughout the show. I have to ask, any Rhode Island organizations involved thus far?
Currently, no. We do have some New England organizations, a couple in Massachusetts and Connecticut, but we have yet to get anybody from Rhode Island yet.
So we obviously have a large listening population in Rhode Island and all over the country, but, well, maybe all over the world, who knows, but certainly all over the nation. If people are either part of a healthcare organization, I don't know anybody who doesn't know somebody who works in healthcare. You know, where do they go for information? How do they find out what this is all about?
Well, and you mentioned individuals that are involved. You know, the model for the network is to have organizations join, and then those organizations can have their people participating. But if people want to learn more and read about what we're doing and find resources, just general information and articles and videos, they can go to our website, healthcarevalueleaders.org. Or they can also go to kind of an acronym, HCVLN.org. They can follow us on Twitter at HCVLN. And they can find us, no surprise, on Facebook, if that's the way they would want to keep in touch with us.
And I'll look up, I'll hook up the Facebook page for the Healthcare Value Leaders Network to the Lean Nation page, right after we get off the air here, Mark.
Okay.
So you're looking for organizations. Is there a size target? Is there a membership fee? How does this sort of structure all work so that people can get a sense?
Yeah, so, you know, for the network, there's a membership, there's an annual membership fee. We have organizations of all sorts of different sizes. I mean, we have big, large academic medical centers. We have smaller community-based hospitals. One of the large, you know, primary care and specialty care group practices in the Boston area, Harvard Vanguard Medical Associates and Atrius Health, they're members of the network, along with Boston's Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. And so that kind of creates a cool opportunity where now people are working not just across the value stream and across the silos within the department. Now they can be collaborating across a broader continuum of care, or what we might call an extended value stream, from hospital, from primary care to hospital and back. But the general profile of organizations we're looking for, organizations that have been working with Lean seriously for 1 or 2 years, organizations that have senior leadership engaged. So we're looking for people that are beyond, you know, just dabbling with tools and projects, and organizations that at least aspire to really doing culture change and changing their management system. And then the third thing is really just a willingness to be open and to share what they're doing, to host Gemba visits when it comes their turn, and to just to be an open part of that collaboration.
Now, is there an application process, or is it just sort of if somebody wants to join and they meet some basic minimum criteria, that it's you know, sort of a foregone conclusion? What's sort of the process?
Yeah, we do our best. We do have a bit of a process. We try to practice what we preach within LAI and the network. People can, on the website, sort of express initial interest, and then we usually, we'll get on the phone or, depending on circumstances, maybe go and visit and really have some discussions about what they have been doing, where they're going, what their aspirations are. We had a meeting in person up at the LAI office in Cambridge last week for people that are interested in the third network that will be starting early next year. And then looking ahead to March, we're anticipating having a meeting again in Cambridge for people that are interested in joining potentially what would be a fourth network to start later next year.
And so if you think about you had said somewhere, I believe you said 24-ish organizations,
right,
who are involved currently. You know, we'll say that next year you add another 12, so now we've got 36 organizations. When you think about the vast number of hospitals, medical practices, large and small, and community hospitals across even just this country, not even extending up into Canada, where I know that you do, you know, just the sheer possibility of really building strength into our healthcare system through this network, I mean, gosh, isn't there great opportunity?
There's a lot of good opportunity. You know, the sharing has been really beneficial. You know, the first cohort group, the first cohort that started in June 2009, everybody re-upped for an additional year, starting back in June, July 2010. So, you know, we try to practice what we preach, and we really try to be focused on our customers, the network members, trying to make sure we understand value from their perspective. So in a lot of formal and informal ways, getting feedback from them as part of our, if you will, customer satisfaction. And so, you know, ultimately the fact they voted to re-up and keep participating and keep learning and keep sharing was something we were very happy about.
Do you have any basic sort of understanding of the organizations that have been participating, the type of improvements they're making, whether they're doing Kaizen events, whether they're doing, like, what are they actually doing to sort of facilitate improvement?
Well, so, you know, you have different organizations that have, some variation of different models. You have some organizations that have been very heavy on the Kaizen event approach. You have some organizations that have really done a lot with what you might call daily lean management in terms of really helping emphasize not just the bigger system redesign, but day-to-day continuous improvement. There's a number of organizations that have been, I think, on a exciting frontier with the strategy deployment or Hoshin-Kanri methodology. ThetaCare, Group Health, an organization up in Washington, St. Boniface General Hospital in Winnipeg up in Canada. You know, organizations that are using that methodology to get good top-to-bottom alignment for their performance measures and continuous improvement efforts. A lot of good work like that happening.
Well, Mark, I'm sad to say that we're running out of time here, but I, as always, it's been a real pleasure to have you on the show. Will you come back again?
I'll definitely come back again. We'll see you on Facebook in the meantime.
For those of you looking to find Mark, you can always find him on his blog at leanblog.org and also via the Healthcare Value Leaders Network. I'll hook up their Facebook page with ours just as soon as we get off the show. Thanks for listening to the Lean Nation, everyone. You've been listening to AM 790, your station for talk and business. I'm Linda Kleineberg. Carl will be back tomorrow with Amita Sherwood, who is with Statamatrix and the SAM Group. So it should be a good show tomorrow. For now, have a great evening, and we'll see you tomorrow. Till I'm gonna need
maximize customers' satisfaction and minimize waste. It's a new way of doing business. The Lean Nation, weekday afternoons at 4 on your station for talk and business, AM 790.